I don't know. He hit me kind of hard, but sorry, I'm going to get his ass back. Straight up.
You are locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Another big game for the Warriors and another significant win, beating the Oklahoma City Thunder 121-100. Kevin Durant, spectacular with 40 points, plenty of drama and everything else. And after everything that happened, Fred Katz, who does Locked on Thunder, and I decided to do the podcast together. So it's the two of us talking for about 35 minutes on everything that happened during this game. I think you'll really enjoy it. We got into some interesting topics towards the end also. Talked about the David West injury, Sean Livingston's path, and a lot of other good things. But there was a lot to talk about with this game. So another interesting game from Oracle Arena between the Warriors and the Oklahoma City Thunder. They have a penchant for that. And while this one was a little bit less competitive in the second half on the basketball floor, it still brought plenty of drama. Warriors win 121-100. And Fred Katz and I, Fred of Locked on Thunder and I, are going to discuss this because it was fascinating.
Yeah, it was. You know, Thunder played a good first half. Honestly, I thought they played a pretty good game. The Warriors just kind of, they do that. They hit Warriors mode, they get really hot, and that was really what happened. They played a really awesome third quarter, and that was really the difference.
This fit one of the standard models that the Warriors have had this year, especially in games at home, where they scuttle a little bit in the first half, some unnecessary turnovers, the other team is feisty, they play well. And then at halftime, they realize, oh, yeah, that's right, we're really, really good, and just come out and blow the doors off the other team in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, they turned it over 13 times in the first half.
Yep.
And no turnovers in the third. They controlled the ball better. They got out in transition. Durant hit a couple of transition threes where nobody really picked them up. They were able to convert off of those turnovers, and that made – that made such a big difference for them. Like, to me, the microcosm of the game was when they were, Warriors were up 63-61, and Sabonis hit that three, which would have given the Thunder a 64-63 lead, but the possession was waved off because of an issue with the shot clock. And Sabonis would have gotten an open three to give them the lead. Instead, they had to redo the possession. Thunder turned it over. Warriors score on the other end. Would have been 64-63 Thunder. Instead, the Warriors go on a huge run, and they win by 21.
Yeah, that sort of thing happens with this team, just the nature of their game in transition in particular, and they stress test a team so much. You and I talked yesterday about, you know, how Oklahoma City was going to fare picking guys up, and at moments they looked pretty good, but then at other moments they looked shakier, just like almost every team, because of the specific threats that the Warriors pose.
Right. I mean, look, it's almost as frustrating as the fact that I'm recording this from an Uber back to my hotel right now.
Ah, you get to experience everything that the Bay Area has to offer, my friend.
Well, my Uber experience tonight was not good. My first one, the Uber couldn't find me, and after 50 minutes, I had to call another one. My second one, the guy got a flat tire as he was coming in to pick me up after not being able to find me. And then the third one, I finally got it. Reginald over here finally got me in the Uber. He just fist bumped. So he's in on this. He finally got me in the Uber. So now I'm going back to my hotel at 1:05 in the morning and have an 8 a.m. flight tomorrow morning. So tomorrow should be really fun.
Well, we're still amped up because of the game. And I think the big moment that fans are going to be talking about is the issue, I guess, between when Zaza Pachulia put Russell Westbrook on the ground and then stood over Russell Westbrook on the ground. We were sitting in different parts of the arena, so I was wondering what you were thinking when that happened.
I was a little surprised that there wasn't, like, a scuffle. That seemed like a kerfuffle type of situation, you know?
Yeah, I'm like, surprised none of the Thunder guys came over.
Yeah, maybe that's just the no Steven Adams effect. I don't think Cantor saw it happen because he was screening a guy and then was like turning around to roll when Zaza got Russ because it was a pick and roll with Cantor. I don't think Cantor saw it happen. I think his head was turned. He's like the big guy in that situation. They kind of ran over and Russ went down pretty hard. It kind of looked like with Oladipo and with a Abrines that, like, their number one concern was, like, their reaction seemed to be, like, oh, like, crap, is Russ okay? As opposed to look at what, you know, Pachulia just did. But just, I was just kind of, not even in, like, a condemning way, I was just kind of surprised. Because usually when there's a foul like that, and especially when it's on, like, a star player, like, someone gets in the dude's face who committed the foul, and that didn't happen. I think that might have been, maybe that's, like, maybe that's Steven Adams' role. Like, maybe Steven does something. Even though Steven's usually pretty stoic. But, I don't know. I was just a little surprised. Usually, like, basketball tropes, you see something play out like that, and it was a lot calmer of a reaction than you're used to seeing.
It was calmer than the reaction Cleveland had just 2 days ago when LeBron went down after getting hit by Draymond Green. And one weird parallel between those two plays, beyond the Oracle crowd just being livid that it happened again, was how these two players, who were both incredibly strong, it seemed like they stayed down longer than the contact warranted. I'm not saying it was a flop necessarily. It was just surprising to see.
Yeah, rough. I think Russ just got knocked in the face. I don't know if he hit his head or his face or whatever it was, but I think Zaza's forearm got him in the face, and I think that's what it was. I tend not to judge when a ginormous 7-foot man just decks you to the ground. He got hit pretty hard. I don't think the hit was. It didn't look that dirty to be honest. Like, it's not like it was, like, full extension of the arm or anything like that. I thought, like, the most intense part of it, from the Pachulia perspective, was just, like, him very clearly, like, walking and standing over him. And I think that's what, like, Westbrook, in his comments after the game, what he had the biggest problem with, and maybe what Oladipo did, too. Because Victor Oladipo is, like, a very even-keel personality. Doesn't get excitable. Like, he's not excitable at all. He tends to be, like, he's a very main, you know, along the lines guy. And for him to say what he said after the game, talking about, how he doesn't know what he was trying, what Pachulia was trying to do there. He doesn't know what he was trying to, prove, but he guarantees it won't happen again. Like, that's not a thing that you normally hear Victor Oladipo say, and I think he was bringing that up more because of what Zaza did after the fact when he stood over Russ, more so than the actual foul.
Right. I felt at the time, but also on replay, and it's also weird that there isn't a really good replay of exactly what happened, like where the contact was. I've seen a few different ones, but nothing truly definitive. To me, it was absolutely a technical, and the flagrant call was, you could go either way, you know, it was kind of a judgment call. And I was surprised to see it officiated the way it was, though it didn't affect the final outcome of the game, just from a process perspective. I was surprised.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it called for, like that. That was definitely a taunting technical.
Yeah, that's you have that in there. If you stand over a dude, it's a technical. It's the same thing when LeBron stood over Draymond in Game 4 of the Finals. You know, what both times. You know, that is what it is, and you'd call it that way. And I don't know whether it was flagrant. And also, just in case people are wondering, those things are not mutually exclusive. It could be a flagrant and a technical. It could be or it could be neither.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That definitely falls for it. I've seen a lot worse called a technical. Like every hanging on the rim technical foul. Or I should say I've seen a lot less called technical, I guess I should say, than what Pachulia did on that play.
So I think that's enough on that little drama. What else did you take away from this game?
You know, I thought the Thunder did a pretty good job considering the circumstances, to be honest. Like, I know they lost by 21, but playing in Oracle, no Steven Adams, Russell Westbrook turns it over 10 times. Considering all of the circumstances, I thought they played a pretty good game. I think the most interesting Thunder takeaway, at least for me, was that Enes Kanter played a good game against the team that should be his number one, I don't want to say kryptonite and compare Canada to Superman, but the team that should be his number one weakness, you know, Like, this is the team that should be able to exploit him the most. And he only played 4 minutes last time. This time around, you know, 20-some-odd minutes, went for 20 points. He looked a lot more confident. He was able to stay on the floor. And with the way he's been playing the last 5 weeks or so, this was, I thought it was going to be an interesting test to see how Kanter was able to do. I thought he played a particularly poor defensive game against the Clippers the other night. And the fact that he was able to stay on the floor, now, of course, Adam's not playing means he had to stay on the floor more. Billy Donovan could have pretty easily tried to come up with some other more creative things, even with Jeremy Grant in foul trouble for part of the game. He didn't have to play Kanter for as long as he did. But even with the way that the Warriors were kind of taking away first options for Kanter on passes and that kind of stuff, he played a good game. And I think with the way he's playing lately is a really, really interesting trend for what's going on with the Thunder lately.
If the Draymond at center lineups are Enes Kanter's kryptonite, JaVale McGee might be the sun that just powers him, because McGee is absolutely terrible. Like Kanter is a terrible matchup for JaVale McGee, because Kanter is very skilled.
Yes.
He's versatile offensively, and JaVale McGee just had no idea what to do with him. And I was sitting there, as soon as it started, I went, why is Steve Kerr doing this? Because they already know what works against Kanter, and also JaVale is not a great screener. He can do some pick and roll stuff, but he's not a great screener. And so they weren't really doing much to hone in on Kanter's weaknesses on the other end. So this thing, they're going, like, this is going to be a really good start. And then when with Jeremy Grant in foul trouble, he got 3 fouls in the first quarter. Kind of saw where that was going to go. And then in the second half, Kanter was fine. I didn't have any sort of a problem with that. But it was certainly less advantageous than when JaVale was in there. And good God, that led to Anderson Varejao playing in the third quarter, and he was an absolute disaster, even though he was +7, because the Warriors just couldn't miss a shot.
Well, one of the things that I thought the Warriors did better than any team has over the last... So this is a theme that I know you know, because we've talked about it a little bit, but Kanter has become so much better of a passer.
Yes.
Than really ever been. He's a legitimately good passer out of double teams now. And one of the reasons why, not because he's become so incredible at surveying the floor, and he's not a great improvisational passer, but he knows his reads now so much better than he has before. So he knows, okay, and this is a credit to Billy Donovan, it's a credit to assistant coach Mark Bryant, really the coaching staff, and in training him to finally understand, like, all right, double team comes from the baseline. This is where I'm supposed to go when we're running this set, when guys are positioned this way. Double team comes from another place. This is where I'm supposed to go. Double team comes from another place. This is where I'm supposed to go. And the Warriors did a really good job, I thought, knowing to take away kind of how Kanter's passing is almost automated in some ways. And the Warriors did a really good job taking away those options and then bringing over double teams. So I thought Kanter looked a little bit more confused in some sense. He certainly wasn't overmatched. He played a really good offensive game, but they took away the passing aspect of it, and it made the double teams a lot more effective, and they forced some turnovers in that sense also, even in the third.
That's a good point, and the Warriors, it makes sense that they know how to do that double, because it's actually similar to one that they've handled on Dwight Howard at various moments in the past, because Dwight is not a great passer in those kind of circumstances, but you want to narrow the field of vision instead of doing it right under the basket, and it really did work pretty well.
Yeah, it totally worked, and it's part of why they're such a good defense. Like, they're so rangy, but they takes really impressive communication to be able to defend in that way, and they're just really good at that. They're really good at that.
We talked about it a little bit before, but Durant was awesome in this game. 40 points, 16 field goal attempts, just ludicrously efficient, and solid defensively, too. I don't think this was his best defensive game, but he certainly did have a couple of highlight plays, had that big block. Was that on Jarian or was that on Victor? I can't remember.
The block was on Grant. You said Jeremy.
Oh, Jeremy. They're all the same. Except they're not the same at all. So
when there's so many Grants, there's so many NBA Grants. The whole family is in the NBA,
yes.
Or was in the NBA.
So I thought Durant was impressive out there, and also his three misses were ridiculous. So he was 13 to 16 from the field. It was a buzzer-beating half-court three, a heat check three, and then this ambitious dunk that just missed by a little bit. And if those are your only three shots and you score 40 points, I mean, I don't know what else to say.
He was absurd. Second straight game against the Thunder, he's just been unconscious, especially in, you know, last time it was like the end of the first, he got insanely hot, and it carried into the second. This time he was like 7 for 9 and had 20 points in the first half, so it's not like he was anything other than fantastic in the first half, but in the third quarter, he was just absolutely on fire. He had 13 in the third. He was hitting those pull-up shots in transition. He was amazing. It's kind of funny that it took us as long to get to Durant because, like, from a pure basketball perspective, there's always drama with these two teams now, right? And we talked about Zaza, we talked about other stuff, but, like, from a pure basketball perspective, like, he was the story of this game. Like, he was amazing in this game. He was really amazing. You know what I think is interesting? That the way the Warriors handle the fact that Kevin Durant used to play for the Thunder is so different from the way that the Thunder do. No one on the Thunder talks about it, wants to talk about it. And then you look at the Warriors postgame, and Curry is talking about, well, of course it's going to be different when Kevin Durant plays against the Thunder. And Durant is doing one-on-ones with five different reporters when I go against the Thunder. I played there for 9 years. Of course that's the case. How could I say that's not the case? And Curry talks about it, and Steve Kerr openly talks about it. And with the Thunder, it's like you talk to them, and it's almost like he never existed there. It's such a weird difference in the way that the two of them, like those two organizations, could not take more of a different approach in how they talk about him, you know?
Especially considering almost every player on the Thunder played with Kevin Durant. It isn't even a circumstance of, oh, he was with the organization and all this stuff. I mean, there are a few guys, Grant included, and El Oladipo, who never played with Durant, but by and large, these are his teammates.
Yeah. No, it's a weird thing that they're, like, kind of trying to erase it, and that's fine. Like, I understand why they handle it that way, and I understand why they do it. It's just funny when you look at it, and the approaches from the two teams just, they couldn't contrast more, you know? And it makes sense because the Warriors and the Warriors from a media relations standpoint are about as open as any other organization, and the Thunder are kind of the opposite. But it's just kind of amazing when you see it on a night like tonight, and you just see it next to each other. It pops out so much, you know?
Durant is also getting a little bit more open about that sort of thing. Like, he's at the point now where he'll basically answer the questions put in front of him openly, and so you have to kind of crack the nut the right way, but you can do it that way. But the Warriors guys, I mean, Draymond in particular, they'll just talk about whatever they're feeling. They'll be really candid about it. I mean, Draymond after the first game said basically we were trying hard here for Kevin, and that it mattered to us too. And I didn't see that really in the first half. They were pressing a little bit, but it was just a sloppy game. We talked yesterday when we did the podcast. My kind of idea was that this was kind of a letdown for them because of how big Cleveland was, which is so strange when you consider the spectacle that Warriors Thunder is and was in this game. But that was true, and then they shook it off and went, oh yeah, we're the Warriors. We can do a lot better than this, and just took it on in the third quarter and played really well.
Yeah, it's weird that this was, like, the fourth biggest moment of their week. That's a weird thing, right?
Yeah, it's strange to cover this team and also the way that that's structured. I mean, because Martin Luther King Day is certainly a big thing. The league has tried to make that into something bigger and using Warriors-Cavs to do that. But just whether it was happenstance or deliberate to put this game, it basically put the two Durant return, or the, like, the big Durant teammate games back-to-back, it really did make this game a little bit lower in terms of that. Also, Steven Adams being out took away a lot of the basketball intrigue.
Yeah, for sure. And they had the stadium unveiling this week, too.
Correct.
Like, there was so much stuff that overshadowed it. It was, from a Warriors perspective, so much stuff that overshadowed it. From a Thunder perspective, you had, you know, the Adams injury, which kind of, like you said, just kind of lower the intrigue because he's, in my opinion, their second best player. I think probably in most people's opinion, their second best player. Certainly their second most important player. And when he's not there, I mean, it hurts their chances on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. We saw a lot of that in the second half. We saw some of that with just the options that weren't necessarily there when you know, offensively, Russell Westbrook's not on the floor or Tanner's not on the floor. Those are really the two really good offensive options. And Oladipo had a pretty shot the ball pretty well, I thought, in this game. But, you know, Steve Adams not there. It's like that's really hard to try to win an Oracle when you don't have your second best player.
Andre Robertson's shooting in this game was certainly problematic. It continues. It was like that in the Western Conference Finals. He's been shaky on the road basically his entire career, and airballing a free throw didn't help either.
Yeah. I thought he played a really good defensive game, though, actually.
He was solid.
I thought he had a really good defensive game. But, I mean, look, like, that's... At this point, it's just like, that's what you're going to get from Dre. Like, that's just... That's what he is. He's not... If he's going to have a big offensive game, it's probably going to be at home. And if he's going to have a big offensive game, or I should say, and, you know, big is obviously relative, you know, from his standard. Yeah, you know, big offensive game means, you know, maybe he hits a couple of threes and you know, shoots 5 for 11 from the field or something like that and finishes the game with 13 points. If he's going to have one of those, it'll probably be at home. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen the next night or set a trend. Like, this is probably the offensive player that he is. He's still going to make a lot of money this offseason because he's such a great defensive player. I think it's easy to focus on his flaws, you know, because they're like the most obvious flaws anybody can possibly have. But I didn't think he was necessarily the problem tonight.
No, I would agree with that. I think that there were other things, though. The Warriors blatantly leaving him open closed down some of the other lanes for Westbrook in particular, and I think contributed to his 10 turnovers.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't just leaving him open. I think leaving him open does that, but if it's just him, then there are ways Westbrook's good enough to where he can get around that, and we've seen it. But with Grant in the starting lineup, too, they weren't guarding either of those guys on the perimeter. And when you have two guys in the starting lineup who you can just, who defenses are perfectly happy to be like, whatever, just leave them out there, and you can collapse 3, 4, 5 guys in on Westbrook whenever you want, and you can feel comfortable about that, and defenses aren't going to hesitate to try to close out. Like, there were times where Grant would catch the ball in the perimeter or in the corner, and a defender wouldn't even go to him when he had the ball. They'd just be like, all right, take it and see what happens. And he missed on a couple of those opportunities early in the game. And when you have two of those guys, it's just like, when you have two of those guys, it's not twice as bad as when you have one of those guys. You know, it increases in a different way than that. It's so difficult to overcome when you've got two of those guys who defenses just don't care about guarding on the outside.
It's a structural problem when they have it. Fortunately, they don't usually, because they have, you know, they can play Sabonis there and do other things. But with Steven Adams out, they were really missing that extra guy. And they also didn't get much in terms of, outside of Kanter and a couple of nice plays from Payne, they didn't get much from the other guys on the bench. Abrines, Morrow, and Singler were all just kind of there.
Yeah, but I mean, Morrow's not a guy who's probably going to get a ton of minutes. He hasn't played in a while. Singler gave what Singler usually does. He's not a horrible defender, but he's so unwilling to shoot offensively at this point. He made a three. That was about it. His unwillingness to shoot and really move without the ball so he can get a shot, I think is really an even bigger deal for him than the misses when they come, because at least if you're willing to shoot, even if you shoot 32% from three, like, teams are just not going to want to leave you that open, you know? Like, every once in a while, you'll still see defenses close out on, like, you know, Andre Robertson. But his unwillingness to shoot is, I think, what hurts him the most.
What did you see from the Warriors bench, guys? Anything that stood out to you?
From the Warriors bench, guys... You know, I'm into Ian Clark's improved a lot. How much better is he now than he was like 2 years ago?
He is better, and tonight was one of his worst games in recent time.
No, I know, but I just want to talk about Ian Clark.
Yeah, he's having a wonderful renaissance, I guess you could say, because he was an option for that first two guard off the bench, and ever since McCaw, well, more when he got the flu than when he was kind of a little bit hurt, Clark took that job, and he has largely held onto it. I think they should, you know, give McCaw a couple more chances, but Clark has filled that role ably. When he's engaged on defense, it really helps, but he's been good.
Yeah, no, I mean, he wasn't. Who else played well off the bench? David West was hitting every mid-range shot tonight. He got hurt, though. Should we talk about David West getting hurt? What does that mean for the Warriors?
It means a lot, because Kerr had been so consistent with his role. So, basically, David West played the beginning of the second, the beginning of the fourth, was the only big man on the floor, whether they were playing Draymond at the four or Durant at the four. They changed that up over the last couple weeks. He was that guy, and Pachulia probably can't really add that many more minutes, maybe a couple if they wanted to. JaVale doesn't fit that lineup particularly well, and nobody else is ready. So they're going to have to figure it out. It's not the biggest problem in the world, but it could cost them, you know, a game or two just on the margins.
Yeah, I'm walking into my hotel now, so podcasters are getting like the whole late night Fred Cass experience right now.
Excellent.
This is a wonderful time. This is a big deal. You guys are about to see what Marriott Courtyard living is like.
What the difference between being a beat writer and being whatever it is that I am.
Yeah, exactly. West was, you know what, the best thing that the Warriors bench did tonight, in terms of, you know, getting back to Kanter, they got great defensive positioning. Like when Kanter was fighting down low for spots, he couldn't get to the block. They did a really good job of keeping the ball out of the corners. They did a good job keeping the ball out of like the mid paint for the most part.
Yeah, they did especially a good job defending entry passes.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's part of like, yeah, absolutely. They push guys out, and they defended entry passes really well. West in particular, he's so tough. He's always been really tough at that and really good at pushing guys out from under the basket and that kind of stuff. They did a great job at that tonight. They really did.
Livingston was fine. You know, he's kind of reached that point where he has a pretty consistent game, and he's not the wild card that Iguodala is.
I'm pretty sure he's never missed a mid-range shot.
Only a couple times, and I still think he should shoot his free throws as a turnaround shot. I don't know if it's allowed, and he should make it happen.
He's so good at it. He's Sean Livingston was, when I was like, before I was an NBA reporter, Sean Livingston was one of my favorite players growing up, because I was a Clippers fan growing up, and Sean Livingston was like, you know, going to be the next great Clipper. And it makes me happy to see that Sean Livingston has really turned himself into having, I know I'm not the first person ever to say this, but it makes me happy to see that Sean Livingston, who's a good dude, has turned himself into like being a very, very useful NBA player after all that he went through.
I don't know if I've ever talked about it on the podcast, but I mean, I've been into the draft for a long time. I actually watched a fair amount of Sean's high school games that I could pull, like that was really early kind of days of getting stuff on the internet, but also he had a couple games on TV. I watched all those, and he was one of my favorite point guard prospects to come into the draft in that like decade. No, for me, it was Chris Paul was number one, Rubio was number two, Livingston was number three.
He was so good, man. When he was young and he first came in, and he was finally putting it all together that year when he got hurt, too. Like, obviously, now he's a much better shooter than he was, because he really, really couldn't shoot. But he was so fluid, the way he moved the ball, just a huge, insanely tall point guard, and he looked like he was going to be a killer defender. He was so much more athletic than he is now, obviously, before the injuries and stuff, and just unbelievable court vision. He looked like he was going to be able to run an offense at like elite levels, and this was also back when being a point guard that couldn't shoot wasn't quite as detrimental as it is right now.
Yep.
But man, he was going to be a guy who could guard multiple positions. I mean, he is a guy who can guard multiple positions, but think about him now and just significantly more athletic. Like, he was
he was like 21 years old, 22 years old when he got hurt too, and he could have been awesome. He really could have been awesome.
And I'm happy for him that while that is still true, that he could have, that what he could have been, that he has turned into something entirely different, but also productive, and he seems happy. He seems comfortable with everything that's happened to work
his way back. Well, it shows how impressive he is. It shows how impressive he is. Like, that's amazing. When a player does what he's done, what Grant Hill did,
Vince Carter's
a little bit of a different level because he was like a superstar who put ego aside and became a really good role player late in his career. Paul Pierce did like I liken what Paul Pierce did to what Vince Carter did, you know? Grant Hill to me is more like injuries killed him and he reinvented the way that he played. I guess maybe Livingston is a different category even than Grant Hill, because Grant Hill was a superstar too. But Livingston, like he could have had injuries ruin him if he just kept playing the same way. He never would have been able to be in the league. And he just totally changed the type of player that he was. And it took so long. I mean, it took basically 5 years for him to consistently get back to doing it and becoming like an actual helpful NBA player on a good team. And it's kind of amazing that he was able to do that. It's a pretty awesome career. Like, I feel like there's a really, I know people have done Sean Livingston stories, but there's a really good story out there following the actual details of just those like 4 years when he was trying to come back and couldn't really do it. And just following those 4 years specifically, there's a really good story somewhere out there following details of that. Someone's going to do that one day, and it's going to be really good.
And it's going to be Lee Jenkins, and I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to keep reading it. But yeah,
it's just going to be a 30 for 30.
The day that I interviewed Damian Jones, I did an interview with him for Locked On Warriors. Before that, I was basically just killing time at practice before Jones was ready. He was doing a 3-on-3 workout with a bunch of the other young guys. And Livingston was asked by another writer about Jones in the D League, and he's just kind of casually, he's like, yeah, you know, I did that. And he was like, oh yeah, that's true. Like, he's one of the few guys that was a basketball prodigy but has also played in the D League.
Yeah, that's true. No, it's he's really, it comes back to like who he is as a person in a lot of ways. Like, only a particular character can kind of do what he did, you know? Like, there are certain people who are just from personality standpoint just not capable of going through what he went through, reinventing themselves and coming back to the league. They're not capable of it. It says something about him.
It certainly does. Anything else you feel like we need to discuss from this game?
No, I think we went through everything. Is there anything else we need that I'm forgetting?
I think it was awesome how many highlights there were in this game. Like, there are certainly games that are hyped that don't lead to that, but Westbrook had a beautiful dunk. Durant had some really nice plays. Curry had that behind the back dribble that led to a Klay three. Just all that sort of stuff. Like, when I was compiling the two different pieces I write for the game, I was just sitting there going, wow, I actually am going to have like 6 highlights in this, and I usually don't have that many.
Yeah, that's true. There were a lot of highlights. That Westbrook dunk was sick.
It was
the Durant one was sick. The Durant one was too.
The missed Durant dunk was one of the bigger highlights of the game, because that and the Westbrook dunk, I believe, were both at my end, and I was sitting there going, "Wait, what?" Just you get to see that in person, just the incredible nature of their athleticism and doing it both. Like, Westbrook's was, I mean, granted, it was around Anderson Varejao, but it was around a human being.
and don't forget, there was also the Andre Robertson airball.
Yeah, it almost got net. Almost.
Almost got net. Almost. That's like the story of my autobiography. That's what the title is going to be. Almost got net.
I like it. I don't think there's a better way we can end this. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Appreciate it. That was fun.
Thanks again to Fred Katz for taking the time to come on. You can read him at the Norman Transcript. You can listen to him on Locked On Thunder. And you can follow him on Twitter at Fred Katz. That's FREDKATZ. This was a fascinating game, just more from a drama perspective than from a basketball perspective, but certainly interesting in that way. We talked about the Pachulia thing. I do think it was more of a technical than a flagrant foul. There wasn't really a whole lot there, but, you know, it being a judgment call is not a big deal for me. And it was technical. He stood over the guy, so process was wrong, result was about right, so I'm not going to draw too much from it, and these teams don't play for another month, so we'll see if that vigor is still there and if it really comes to play at all. I mean, Steven Adams will hopefully be there, so that'll make it a little bit more fun. We will have to see. And the David West injury is going to be significant. Their Warriors are going to have to try out some different players. They're going to have to test out some different rotation things. But it is at a time in the year where experimentation is a good thing. So as long as he is back strong for the playoffs, which he certainly should be, it looks like he'll be evaluated in 2 weeks. So plenty of time for all that. Still not completely sure if I'm going to do a Thursday night, Friday morning podcast. If I can find the right topic, I probably will. Have a couple other different irons in the fire for tomorrow. And then definitely going to do something after that Rockets game. It's just a big contest. So certainly do something then. You can look forward to that over the weekend. And, you know, just keep on trucking with the material. Always a lot going on. Then it's going to be another big week for the Warriors in terms of number of games. If you want to support the show, there are a lot of different ways that you can do that. You can leave a rating. You can leave a review. You can also subscribe, download every episode, and spread the word through word of mouth. Really do appreciate that, to tell people that you think would enjoy the show to check it out. Hopefully they enjoy it as much as you do. And if not, then, you know, at least they tried it out. And if you want to advertise in this, especially if you're a local company, you can reach out to me the same place for feedback, good, bad, indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. It's a great way to reach a dedicated audience that is largely based in the Bay Area, so you can check it out that way. And as I said, all other feedback is also welcome. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux. You can read my pieces on this game at The Athletic. First one is already up when I'm recording this. Second one will be up by around the time most of you listen to this. And I'll have a new Real GM Radio podcast, which will have a pretty heavy Warriors tilt on it, not with a Bay Area person, but with somebody who has been following the team pretty closely as well. That should come out Thursday night Pacific time. Not completely sure. That is the tentative plan. So again, thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.